Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Bob's conversation with Bob Mata, the host of The Defense Diaries, and his take on the Delphi case. This was a great conversation, with Delphi being near and dear to my heart. I can't wait to discuss it. I'm Zach Weaver, and today I'm joined by Bob Ruff and Janet Varney, and we're here to discuss it all. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
Yeah. First of all, I want to give you guys a little heads up or update on the new case. Things are still moving forward there. I'm in a bit of a battle right now getting records. Trying to find I don't remember if I told you guys last week, but the police department claims that they have lost, and a previous chief had shredded all of the entire case file, which is a violation of evidence retention laws in Michigan. So I informed them that I know exactly where they can get a copy, because they would have had to copy the entire case file to the DA. So go find it there. I'm working on filing record requests with the DA. I'm going to the clerk's office tomorrow to get the trial exhibits to get some of that. I have talked to a few witnesses. Tomorrow I'm going to actually get we're doing case stuff. Like, it'll be for the podcast too, but I'm actually going to get an affidavit signed tomorrow afternoon. So we're moving forward. But it is, because I don't want to keep a carrot dangling in front of you and keep expectations, just know, I needed to just pull back and say, we're going to wait till we get this stuff and do it. We'll obviously continue doing episodes, probably do like we've done in other seasons. Between seasons, we'll do some interviews and continue putting content out every week. But I don't want to jump the gun on this until I have everything in hand ready to go. And once the season starts, you'll see why it's critically important that there are certain things that I accomplish before we start airing these episodes, and that stuff will come out. You'll realize why that is. A lot of it is, I just want to let you guys know that we're not just sitting back on our haunches. We are working a lot. Robbie had just mailed me another bunch of case files. I just was able to scan in all of the trial transcripts this week, so I have digital versions of all those. We are pushing the ball forward on that one. But as I mentioned, I've got beginning of April, I've got that first week, we're not gonna have any episodes because it's my spring break. I'm gonna be off with the kids for the week. We're gonna start the season when we have everything ready to start the season. We're just going to continue doing, hopefully putting out meaningful content for you guys along the way. That being said, Rachel and Caroline, big shout out to them. I just got, literally right before we came on the air to record today, they just sent me the audio where they actually, and they put in a ton of work going through cross-referencing everything that, as far as the timeline goes with the Adnan case, from what Jay said in his first interview and what Jen said in her first interview. So you'll have all that together. So I'm going to put that out this week while I arrange other interviews. Some of you guys gave me some suggestions for other interviews. Keep those coming. If there's anybody you want to hear from, and we're going to keep pushing things forward while we work in this other case. And this case is going to be bananas once we start launching into that. Also, as in the kind of the housekeeping realm, an update. You guys heard a few weeks ago, we had Jamie Snow had a hearing for DNA forensic testing, DNA and fingerprint testing to be done in his case. Everybody that was there, I know Jennifer Hill was there. Everything seemed to have gone very well at the hearing, and we just got the ruling back already, and the judge has denied the motion. And it's if you go on a fan page, they posted kind of what was written on there, what the judge's reasonings were for it. It's so frustrating. So part of the argument that they gave was with testing fingerprints was that, because they have fingerprints from the door in certain places in the gas station, that it's a gas station. There's people in and out all the time. So even if we identify a fingerprint, that's not going to tell us anything. I don't entirely disagree with that. The fingerprints in and of themselves may not be enough to overturn the conviction, because they don't want to, waste the time and resources, and as they would put it, the integrity of the conviction, for something that wouldn't overturn the conviction. But they also, there was a motion to test DNA, including blood on the floor, DNA from the bullets, DNA from fingerprints that were found at the scene. A lot of things that were connected directly to the case. And it is such a bullshit argument. The argument that was made by the judge in the ruling was that there's no sign of a struggle, and therefore they don't believe that testing that DNA could produce any meaningful results, which is such a fucking cop-out. It's so frustrating because we don't, nobody knows what happened in there, right? So no signs of a struggle. There's a stool that was, if you guys remember season 7, a stool that was knocked over. There was certainly, you know, something happened. Bill was not found. Bill Little was not found, like, back behind the counter where he was supposed to be. He was out around the corner, which to me indicates there probably was some kind of a struggle.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure. But the thing is, if you find DNA of someone on his body, on something like a bullet that is absolutely connected to the case, there's no denying that. So to make the argument that there's some harm done by trying to find out if that stuff exists is complete BS. I think they should test the fingerprints too. You can't get hurt by having too much information. But, and so don't get me wrong, if you're like, I'm not saying I agree with the judge. I'm saying I can see that argument. You know, if you find fingerprints on the door of a gas station, what does that really tell you? But to say that we can't test the DNA on the body and around the body that's blood at a murder scene because you don't think there was a struggle there is bullshit. I know that they are going to be appealing that ruling. So hopefully once we get it out of that courtroom and up to a higher court, hopefully it'll be over. This, you know, it comes back to what we say. What we say this in every case: just test the fucking evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Just test it. Like the prosecution should never be fighting this hard to stop testing from being done.
Such a bad look.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. There's nothing. If you are so confident in your conviction, then test the evidence. Just like the West Memphis 3 case, you're so sure Damien Eccles was there. Test the evidence.
Yeah,
prove it. You know, so we will keep you. That's a really good point. Carolyn just said in the chat, judges shouldn't be acting as investigators. And that's absolutely true. I agree 100%. It's not the judge's job to determine if they think there was a struggle. Let's find, gather data, and then we can analyze the data and figure out what it means. So that's what's going on with that. I don't think we have any other housekeeping going on other than, like I said, I'm not sure. Next weekend will be an episode. The following weekend, I believe, is the spring break week. I'll have to look at a calendar, but just know that on Easter Sunday is the day I'm leaving to go with my family down to on spring break vacation. So that week, there won't be any episodes. And can you guys think of any other
not off top
housekeeping we have going on?
Nope, not off the top of my head.
All right, JB?
No, I just want to send my best to Jamie and, you know, all of the folks that have been working so hard on that. I know it's incredibly frustrating. Jennifer Hill has worked so hard, and these are the setbacks that just feel so exhausting and hard. But also, I see, Jennifer, you turning that exhaustion into fury, which I think is sometimes a really great fuel. So hang in there, everybody.
Yeah, and Jennifer also just pointed out too, and she had posted this on the fan page, that Jamie, of course, was pretty upset last week, and they talked, but she had mentioned in the chat here and also on Facebook that conversation did end up turning to a discussion on fainting goats. So,
girl, I will talk about fainting goats any day with you, Jamie, or anyone else. Fascinating and, may I say, hilarious.
Yeah.
Poor goats.
And also, that's another good thing just to point out to any of you, that for all the people that are always like, I want to find a way to help, a lot of times being that friend to the people that are in prison is so much more help than you could ever imagine. It's worth more than money. It's worth more than anything. The fact that Jamie has Jennifer to talk to about fainting goats on a day we had such devastating news is great. And I know a lot of people had asked, I've had a crazy week, so I haven't had time to really think about it, but a lot of people asked if I can have Jamie come on and give his reaction to that. I probably can, and we may do that, but I do want to verify with his attorneys, because I know that if I was the lawyer, and you had this case in this court that just happened, and you're upset with a judge's ruling, and you have an appeal going, I don't think it would be the best idea to go out publicly and talk about it.
Yeah, I agree.
I get that.
Yeah, so I just want to talk to a lawyer and have that discussion before I, because I don't. The last thing I want to do with any case is put the convicted person in jeopardy.
Absolutely,
because it's something that I'm airing. So we'll check on that stuff. And Carolyn asked if Jamie can receive letters. He can, and you can even also email him. Well, maybe Jennifer could put a post on the fan page that explains how to do that, because we need to get going on this. So first of all, I know neither of you guys got to hear the interview that was happening. Zach is deeply into the Delphi case. I know, Janet, I know you super interested in the case and love Bob Mata. So who wants to go first? What'd you guys think?
I have been busy as hell lately. Wrapping up season 14, prepping for season 15, teaching part-time, the list goes on. And the part of my life that's been suffering most is my health. I used to spend an hour and a half to 2 hours at the gym every day, and lately that time's been cut by more than half. I needed a solution, and I found it with Total Gym. Do you want a total body workout in just 10 to 20 minutes? You need to try Total Gym. This thing does it all. And right now, you can try Total Gym for 30 days for just $1 plus free shipping. Seriously, $1. The Total Gym Fit, Total Gym's newest model, lets you do over 85 exercises in one home gym, so you'll never get bored working out again. And Total Gym accommodates all fitness levels from ages 8 to 80, so literally anyone listening to this can enjoy the Total Gym. I set our Total Gym up right in our living room. It collapses small enough to push under the couch when we're not using it, and I can pop it up into action in seconds. I've been making up for lost time at the gym while watching TV in the evenings with my family. And the whole family is using it. Bella has been using it to get ready for her senior year of softball, and even 13-year-old Parker has been getting in on the action. And what I found crazy is that I'm actually getting a better workout on the Total Gym than I do in the weight room. I'm seeing gains that I haven't seen in the gym in years. How Total Gym works is by using a percent of your body weight as resistance. You set the resistance level, higher to build muscle, lower to tone and slenderize. The unique design allows you to easily move from one exercise to another without having to add or remove weights. That means you can do strength training, cardio, and stretching all in one machine. Total Gym, seriously, my new favorite sponsor. It's actually impacting my life. I'm able to keep up with my workout routine without sacrificing family time. Plus, with Total Gym, there's no assembly required. It sets up in minutes right out of the box and conveniently folds for storage under your bed or in a closet. Remember, it only takes 10 to 20 minutes a day to reshape your body. Head to totalgymdirect.com/truth for an additional 20% off your order. Plus, that includes a free ab crunch attachment and free shipping. This special offer won't be available for much longer. That's totalgymdirect.com/truth for an additional 20% off. And make sure you go to my URL, totalgymdirect.com/truth, so they know that I sent you.
JV, go for it.
I thought it was great. I definitely have been every time. I haven't been going on live when he's doing them in the moment, just because it seems like I'm always doing something. So I often have to wait for the, you know, either like a repeat or when it drops into his podcast feed is a guarantee that I will hear it. So there are some times that he's doing updates on Delphi that I don't hear until he drops them into the podcast feed. But I am super, super caught up on everything that he has ever dropped in there. And I really enjoyed the conversation. He's so passionate about it. And, you know, I remember when the three of us were kind of digging into it like a year ago, you know, when things were, there's always just something going on, it seems like, with that case.
Yeah, but probably when that Frank's motion came out, we really dove into it.
Yeah, which was a few months ago. Yep.
It's just his perspective is fascinating. And he talks about it, you know, in the interview with you, but he gets real fired up. He gets real fired up about, you know, those sorts of like judge misconduct or prosecutorial misconduct. And he's a watchdog. He's a real watchdog. So I thought it was fascinating. Zach, what did you think?
I really appreciated his perspective. The one thing that I did notice listening, I don't listen to Bob a lot. I've listened to maybe one or two of his podcasts. I don't listen to him a lot. The one thing I noticed about this particular interview and his perspective, and he's very forthright about it, is he says he's on the defense's side. Everything he says, he's on the defense's side. He's very forthright about that. And one of the things I noticed in this is he continued to humanize Richard Allen, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but everybody in the world knows him as Richard Allen.
Yeah.
The entire interview, he called him Rick.
I didn't even notice that.
The entire interview, he calls him Rick Allen. Mm-hmm. Rick Allen. Mm. Rick Allen, where he's trying to use this, the defense side, right? To touch your personal being of being like, this is a person,
right?
This is not Richard. This is a nickname. This is a shortened name. You know, like your name's Robert, we call you Bob. Mm-hmm. You know, my name's Zachary, we call me Zach. Like, it's that personal side that he's trying to kind of touch while he's doing this. So that's something I really caught on to quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things, like, you talk about statement analysis. I don't know how the hell to do that, but I caught that very quickly in his discussion about him doing that, trying to humanize Richard Allen in this instance, because he is on the defensive side.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me.
Yeah. I don't know. Mischief, I just want to respond. You are pointing out that it's alleged misconduct. I was making a general statement about Bob and his attitude across the board when he's just talking about stuff. I'm not saying that that happened. I recognize that it's alleged, but I wasn't speaking specifically about that case. I was saying Bob Motta gets very fired up about any form of misconduct, alleged or otherwise, from the state.
So. Yeah. I really enjoyed the perspectives, outside of like case specific stuff, but about, you know, how Bob really got into how he views the defense's job and how he tries to, like he said, I like how he put that, you know, he's on the defense side. From what he's seen, he doesn't see a strong case there,
mm-hmm.
and he thinks this is an innocent person, but also that he's not willing to make that judgment until,
and I greatly appreciate
the evidence comes out. But it is good, and I think I said this in the episode, it's a good reminder. I thought back to, remember when he was first arrested. And I think, Janet, I don't know why I remember this moment, but you thought for a minute and you were like, what's his name? Oh, it doesn't matter what his name is. And then you caught yourself and came back and said, wait a minute, I said that and that's not fair because he hasn't been convicted of anything and we should learn our lesson and we shouldn't already decide that this guy's guilty. So I think it's a good reminder to step back into that. And I know there's other podcasts that have covered the murder sheets. Like, I know from a little bit from the chat here and from the chat when Bob was on, that Mischief certainly does not agree with most of what Bob said or some of what Bob said about the case and about the the alleged misconduct. When I heard him, and there was some of that chat was going on during the episode when he was talking about like the leaked documents and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I didn't hear something that he said, like I never heard him say that the prosecutor leaked it or anything like that. What I heard him say was, when I think about who would benefit from that, and certainly the prosecutor would benefit from that, is what he said. You know, I don't have a, whether that's what happened or not. I don't think I heard Bob say, so that's what happened. I think that's just the way he's looking at it, which I can appreciate because that's how I do data analysis. Is like, well, what is it telling me? What, you know, whose benefits, follow the money, all these different things, like what, how does this look to me? But I just do want to acknowledge, so you don't feel like you're talking and doing an abyss, Mischief, I recognize that you feel quite passionate about the case and maybe don't so much align with what Bob said.
Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, I could not be more aware of how little I feel like we actually know. And I think, you know, I thought you guys were pretty good about just continuing to say, like, we don't know what we don't know. We don't know. We have no idea if he's deeply involved, if Richard Allen is deeply involved. But that, I think you just see Motta, you see Bob just being very excited when he feels like he's seeing lawyers fight as hard as they possibly can, and that his perspective of that and his interpretation of that is that he feels that these lawyers really believe that their client is innocent. Again, that's all perspective. That's all subjective stuff. But I don't, I mean, I absolutely don't know, you know, that's why there should be a trial.
Yeah.
Because well, I don't know what the evidence, none of us really know what the evidence is. Not truly. Mm-hmm. At all.
I felt he had a great perspective on it. You know, he was really able to, when that PCA came out and we finally got our hands on the PCA ourselves and we read it and we were kind of like, well, this doesn't seem like a lot. You know what I mean? Like, I hope they just put enough on here to arrest him and I hope they have more.
Yeah. Well, he made a really good characterization because I've actually also read the PCA for the Idaho murders, and he had referenced that there, the difference between, and it is staggering. And I remember when we first got the PCA for this case, I remember first reading it, like, that's a lot. Like, he was there, he admits he was there, they got that. But I remember right at the beginning, I'm like, wait a minute, an unspent shell casing that they have somehow, like, that's not, like even striation patterns is almost bordering on debunked. An unspent casing, like, that seems pretty weak. And I think Bob put it in pretty good perspective. Like, when, you know, when they say he admits to being there, well, what, you know, admits has kind of a negative connotation to it. He didn't admit, he acknowledged that, you know, he came forward on his own. And I have no idea if this guy is guilty or not. To me, I mean, at one side, that seems very weak. On the other side of it, is like, they have video of the guy supposedly that is the one that, like, took him down the hill and did this, wearing that blue jacket on that bridge. And this guy says he was there wearing a blue jacket on that bridge at that time. Like, I'll be curious to see a trial when they get around. And Zach and I, so the trial is actually going to be happening like less than 2 hours from my house. So I'm hoping that when it happens that I can, if it happens in the summertime after school's out, which I think it won't, because I think they said it's going to be May 13th is when it's going to happen, if there's no more delays. But I'm hoping to get down there for at least some of it.
I would really like to go as well. And, you know, you talked about that spent shell casing. Go ahead, Janet. Sorry.
No. Stay on that subject, because I was going to ask something.
That spent shell casing, while I do fully agree that that would be torn apart in trial, there's no way that holds up. It's junk science.
Yeah.
I do believe that you could, there's enough you could probably pull off of a gun based on that, because of the way it cycles, because of the ejector. From everything that I know about firearms and all my expertise with firearms, I think there's enough you could
pull. I would think that, though, there would have to be a flaw in it in order to do anything more than saying that that is an ejector from a Glock model, whatever.
You're right. You're 100% right. But that's what I'm saying, though, is if there is something, there's all these little things that happen in the barrel that don't have to be fired to scratch the shell casing.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. And I still believe that it's probably junk science.
Yeah.
But I think there is more to that than what's let on. I think there's more to it than people just throwing it away as complete garbage.
Yeah.
I guess my opinion.
Well, and of course, most people listening to this all come from the kind of a defense minded perspective, which is like, you got to prove this to me. And to me, like I said, and I could be wrong about that, but I could see them saying this came clearly from an ejector on a Glock 40.
Mm-hmm.
For them to say it came out of that Glock 40, I would be real curious how they're able to do that. And that's the part that I'll think, and if the evidence is that it came out of this model of gun, then maybe that's all it is. We'll see when it gets a trial.
And I could be 100% wrong on this. That's my feeling on it.
So the question I wanted to quickly ask is, you just mentioned it, Bob, when we're talking about this, the guy in the video, and what he was wearing, and that Richard Allen seems to have been, you know, admittedly wearing something very similar. In fact, kept all of those clothes. And I say this because I feel like there's been so much weird intrigue around how all of that information was kept from the public or released to the public. And you obviously talked about it a lot with Bob, like the police sketches and all of that, and just the confusion around that. Are we certain, at least from the perspective of what the police have confirmed, that the person in the video is the person who led them down the hill? Like, has that connection been solidified? Not just like, I've taken a video of someone and it might not be the same person.
My understanding is that the audio we hear of guys down the hill is all part of that video.
Okay.
So my understanding, and some of this has been, and I don't remember what came from what, but I've had some off record sources that have talked about it too. My understanding is that there's actually a lot more audio.
Right.
But that they obviously didn't want shared with anybody. And so what it sounds like from what I've been told, I don't have personal knowledge of this, what that was her starting the video, and started the video of the guy. And as he got closer to them, she put her phone in the pocket. So it was still recording video, but it's just black because it's in the pocket.
Right.
But all the audio is there. So there's like a, it seems like there's a seamless connection.
Got it.
Between that guy walking up to them and all the way down to the murders.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification. Yeah. It was just so, obscure when they first started releasing information. I sometimes have trouble remembering like what they confirmed, what they changed, what they never revealed, all of that.
We just got to be careful because, you know, we want to go to the trial because, again, like, as I think through it again, because a lot of people in the chat are like, yeah, every guy in Indiana wears that outfit. We also have to remember that most wrongful convictions come from a weird coincidence. So we have to remember that. But it's like, you know, that these witnesses that see him, he acknowledges being there, seeing those people, he acknowledges being on the bridge. And then there's in this video, one sole guy wearing that outfit on the bridge. It's like, I'm going to be very curious to see how the defense gets over that at trial. But also in the trial, like someone in the chat was saying that, you know, they have a real problem with the defense filing motions like the Franks motion and things like that to try to circumvent the gag order. The thing is, they're never like, this is not a, like, in my opinion, constitutionally, this is like, this gag order is not okay. It's not okay for the prosecution to put out whatever tidbits of the crime they want to the public to sway people to their side and then try to seal up and not let anybody else know anything else that could come, you know, that could maybe sway them to the other side. You know, so personally, I don't have a problem with them doing that because I never thought it was right to begin with. Like, the public literally per our constitution has a right to know what's going on. And if there's a gag order, there's a gag order. You don't get to pick one side gets to share what they want. And the other side doesn't get to share anything on their side. And then also from what people are calling the Franks memo, some people call it a complete BS, you know, BS motion that was intended to muddy things up. I those things that are in there, like I guess I don't understand what people want. Like, if all that stuff's true, you know, if this guy had you know, said that he was there and spit on the body, and if there were these connections to the Odinism, all that stuff, like, why is that? Like, I don't understand why somebody would think that that's not fair to make a ruling on that. If this is, it's the whole concept of fruit of the poisonous tree. If they got the search warrant by omitting and lying about evidence, and it's their job and duty to file those motions with the evidence that they have, which seems like, you know, and maybe it's all bullshit. I don't know. I just don't know. You know?
Yeah. I mean, to that end, it's very hard to understand or imagine why, with an incredibly high profile case that is steeped in so many strong emotions for very good reason, that you wouldn't investigate those things. Like, to give the cops the benefit of the doubt, what purpose does it serve to shove anything under the rug when so many eyes all over the world are have already been on the case, are going to continue to be on the case? Like, I don't know what the reason is why you wouldn't do your due diligence and follow up on things like that. So, I mean, again, this is why people end up being falsely convicted, but I'm just kind of baffled by, you know, like, maybe they'll just be able to show that they actually really did follow it up and it just was meaningless or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. And also, like, you got to keep in mind, and we need to get into these questions, we're rambling on for 25 minutes, but you know, the investigation into the whole Odinism angle and all that stuff, keep in mind that was cops doing that, cops on the case that were doing that. That information came from the detectives that were working on that angle that thought that it had legs. So, and I think Bob pointed that out too. So again, not to say it's all true, and I'm not trying, because I don't know, but to say that it shouldn't be done when you have, like I said, detectives on the case who it came to light to the defense, from my understanding, because those detectives were like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have all this evidence, and then you just went and are ignoring all of it. And then, you know, so anyway, We'll see how things shake out. You know, I certainly don't want to, I can't speak intelligently enough to sit here and try to argue with anybody about it, but I'm even more open-minded now after talking to Bob, because of him reminding me of the fact that this is an innocent guy until proven guilty, and we need to wait to trial to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I certainly am not saying that I believe that a person is innocent or guilty based on Bob Mata's coverage. And my memory of your conversation was that he was like, please, God, don't have an opinion about this. No one should.
Right. Yeah.
I think the hardest thing for me is knowing this is hard to say, but is knowing that I'm biased on this case and knowing that I want nothing more than for this case to be solved. And I, you know, and in my head, I want it to be solved properly. I want it to be done. I want truth to be served for Libby and Abby. And so bad that it's hard to not want this to be right.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. Couldn't agree more. Yeah.
If we're talking about like in my heart of hearts,
mm-hmm.
I hope Richard Allen is guilty. I hope they prove he's guilty, and that's the end of it. Like that's just that's human me, not
yes,
you know, not investigator me or anything. Because yeah, I want justice to be served. I want this to be over with. I want it to be done. I just haven't seen anything yet that has me completely convinced. And it's a hot topic. Like I said, there's some of the chat going on there. Like when I mentioned the detective, they said there was only one detective. Still, that's one detective. That's a detective that works for the department. Mm-hmm. That's their job. They have more knowledge than you. They have more knowledge than me. They have more knowledge than Bob. They have more knowledge than the merger sheets. They're literally working in the case as a detective on this case and thought that there were some, there are legs there. So it's certainly at least worth noting.
I think. And I think that by putting out that Frank's motion, I think the defense, you know, easily put out that there's reasonable doubt or there can be reasonable doubt based against Richard Allen. So,
yeah. Well, and that's this last thing I'll say before we get into the questions. But, you know, the other thing that I said in the episode that frustrates me, like if there was shady stuff being done, I'm not saying there was, but if there was, if there were things hidden, if there were things forgotten about, if there's anything shady done and that causes him to get acquitted and he is actually guilty,
mm-hmm.
that's exactly why we have to police and be watchdogs and why defense attorneys exist and why us, the public who do what we do exists is to hold people accountable, because cheating and not doing your job right can just as easily wrongfully convict the wrong person or let the right person off the hook because you tried to cut corners. So I just hope that's not the case here.
Shannon says, are there any repercussions possible if Allen is acquitted? His life in Delphi is kind of over. I'm so frustrated that after 5 years of investigation, this case is turning into such a cluster at the poor families of those two sweet kids.
I don't think so. Generally not. As long as the prosecution can show that they had just cause and probable cause to bring the charges and take them to trial, that's how our system works. I mean, sometimes, you know, investigators believe they got the right guy. That's why we have trials. If you go to trial and prove that you're innocent, then that's the end, you know, that's the end of it. So, no, I don't think there's any repercussions for that.
Yeah. Sorry, a lot of these are comments. So they're great comments, but I'm trying to like filter through and get some questions. How is the judge still presiding over this case after showing what is, in my opinion, clear favoritism to the prosecution and having her decision to remove Allen's attorneys against his will overruled?
I don't know. That's a lawyer question, and to Mischief's point in the chat, you know, that was as far as the bias that's being shown by the judge towards the prosecution as opposed to the defense. That's Bob's opinion, right? So I'm sure there's plenty of other people that would disagree with that. So I definitely do not know that that's the case. I know there was a hearing yesterday, and I meant to catch Bob's coverage of that. To hear what went on yesterday. I haven't heard anything about that yet. But I believe it was along those lines as far as if the defense... Do you know, Zach, if the defense was able to stay on the case?
I don't know. I missed it.
Yeah. The whole thing was just weird. It was definitely very strange. You know, the leak, and then they had to remove themselves from the case. Richard Allen didn't want them removed from the case. Yeah, there's a lot going on there, but I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been following the rulings, and I mean, his original lawyers have been restored to him. Now he, I guess, technically has four lawyers, although it's possible that all of that could have changed just in the time.
And yesterday they did drop the two kidnapping charges. I do know that.
They dropped the kidnapping charges, yeah. But still the murder charges exist, yeah. Right?
God, I would imagine so. Someone says that he's doing another live tonight. Jennifer said that he's doing another live tonight. That's not, I guess, something that will end up in this recording. Sorry. Yeah. Sue says, was there evidence that one of the girls was dating or corresponding with someone online in reference to them collecting a bunch of old phones and early conversations that were being shared with the public about people being looked into specifically through correspondence that they might have had online and catfishing and stuff like that?
Are they asking if there's evidence in Richard in Allen's this phones case.
Just any evidence at all that we have been made aware of that the girls were even corresponding with someone online?
Yeah, there was the Anthony Schatz account. Wasn't that one?
Yes.
That was, I believe for sure that that account, the guy running that account, was corresponding with one of the girls that day. I think it was Snapchat or something.
Yeah, that's where that Keegan Anthony Klein stuff comes from. Is that he was the one that was believed to be in charge of that account. That's how they arrested him. That's mm-hmm. where this whole Delphi connection came to, was because he had been in connection with them or in contact with them that day.
Right.
So, but I think everything that we've moved on from to that point had nothing to do with the murders. It was just happenstance.
Do you know if anything ever became of that? Because there was the longest time we all thought this must be the guy, because he was arrested like on other charges. And
don't you dare lump me in with that. I never thought that was the guy.
Yeah. Well, some people thought that was the guy because of the fact that, you know, he was arrested. I think it wasn't for other charges he was arrested, right? Mm-hmm. And then they,
in July, he was sentenced to 40 years for child exploitation.
Yeah. And that's what it was. So there was the child exploitation stuff going on, but then also we knew that he was communicating with the girls on that day.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a whole lot of information about it. So it seemed to me, it seemed like a promising lead. And then next thing we know, Richard Allen's arrested and that's the last we hear about him.
Yeah. I don't know anything about that from that day forward.
Yep. For you to ask us the next one, somebody just asked in the chat before I lose it, Ava wants to know what I make of Richard Allen supposedly making claims of his guilt on many occasions. I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard of it. So kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, as far as who gets to do what, like we're talking about the defense finding ways to get information out to the public on a sealed case, but then the prosecution makes sure they slide into the unredacted in their motion that he had made supposedly confessions over the phone, I think, to his wife or something while he was in jail. I don't know. Again, like all of that on both sides, I want to wait till trial and hear what that's about. You know, I think that the defense kind of claimed there was, you know, that was due to the circumstances in jail. I don't know. I haven't heard them. I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. This case is very dense. There's a lot to it. I don't think anyone is arguing that, no matter what they think is happening from the defense or a prosecution perspective. Kathy says the assertion that the prosecution lost over 70 hours of recordings of witnesses blows my mind. I'm so sorry. This is referring to something that is not part of the conversation that you two had. So do you know what I'm referencing?
Well, I mean, the prosecution lost a lot.
I don't remember, Bob. I don't remember you guys talking about this in your.
We I don't think we talked about it on the podcast, okay. But that was kind of part of the. So that was the whole thing with Richard Allen, right? They interviewed him like the day after. And this is according to Bob. I have not verified this in the case file for my own eyes, but according to Bob, and Zach may know better than me, that, you know, his interview was they asked for anybody that had been there that day to come forward to talk to them. And he voluntarily came in and talked to them. But that was, you know, if you remember when he was first arrested, when I was so frustrated by the fact, it's like, wait a minute. So you interviewed a guy that was wearing those clothes that people said they saw on the bridge. Like all those statements came from way back.
Right.
And then you just forgot and missed it. And it wasn't caught until 5 years later. Somebody caught that this happened. But then I do recall somewhere. Do you remember that, Zach? I don't remember if it was in the conversation with Bob or not, but at some point it came out that there was, maybe it was even in that Frank's memo, that there was, that they had asked for, in part of the file, and the prosecution said they had lost like 70 hours of recordings of witness interviews.
I don't think it was in your interview. I think that must have been, came out at another point, because I don't think you guys ever talked about that.
Yeah, it might have been in that. It might have been in that Frank's motion, now that I'm thinking about it, because I do recall hearing, because I remember being like, it's one of the, again, admittedly, I look at most cases from the defense side, from the wrongful conviction side. And so when I see that, it's like, here's what appears to be on the surface, at least kind of a weak case against this guy. And then we have this detective that's like, we were working this angle and thought we had these other people and they arrested him. And then the defense is like, well, let's see the case. Oh, we lost all the other interviews. You know, that it's something. It's if that's the case, it's incompetence at best. Hopefully not worse than that.
That's all I have.
That's perfect. Well, it's good that I rambled that long then.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I don't want to encourage that behavior on a regular basis. So that's why I'm reluctant to agree and wrap it up.
Well, I truth be told, I did see in the list that we had mostly statements of people saying how much they enjoyed it and less questions. And just to give you guys a heads up, you're going to hear this on Friday. And by then you'll be seeing that my school had now won the semifinals, I'm sure. But my high school girls basketball just won their state quarterfinals game 43-34. They're heading to the semifinals. They're heading to the Breslin of Michigan State. So good on them.
Congratulations to them.
Yep. And with that, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thanks, everybody, for being in the chat. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com designed, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kay Woodyomnik, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found @BobRuffTruth, Janet can be found @JanetVarney, and Zach is @Z2TheQ. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.